could possibly help us avoid those kinds of wars in our future. Cold War was a very different kind of war from any that we see today, certainly different from Iraq or Vietnam. Certainly had less visibility on the one hand. We didn't see it on the 6 o'clock news every night. And on the other hand, for the first time in recorded human history, we came closer than anyone would ever like to believe to doing the unthinkable and unleashing the power of nuclear weapons in a war that so many at the time believed was survivable. Well, it was during that time that the seeds for this project were planted, for the research that's led to the discovery of a message in the cells of our bodies. My thinking at the time was that if we are, in fact, here on purpose, then it makes perfect sense that somewhere in our past, who or whatever is responsible for our being here, would have left us a clue to tell us that we're here on purpose. If we could find that clue, maybe, just maybe, it would be the catalyst for us to see beyond the differences that have separated us and led to the wars such as those in the 20th century. I was trained as a scientist, and in my training, I began searching for those clues in the only way that I knew how, in the world around me. My search led me into some of the most remote and ancient, rugged, pristine places remaining in the face of the earth today. Places where those who have come before us have stored what they knew in their time for the people who would live in their future. From the temples of Egypt's deserts, to tiny villages in the Andes Mountains of Bolivia and Peru, into the ancient monasteries of the highlands of central Tibet and the Tibetan Plateau, I had the opportunity to meet with the people and read their records and hear their history. And as interesting as every one of these sites was, not one of them told me what I was looking for. However, they all had a common clue. And that clue simply invited me, you can probably guess. It said, stop looking for these answers in the world around you. You're never going to find them there. Look for the answers within. Almost universally, the clue said, seek within and you shall find. Look to yourself and all that you seek shall be revealed. And as I saw these clues again and again, and they were so consistent over such long periods of time in so many different cultures, I had to ask myself a question. Is this the sign that tells us that maybe these clues are literal? If there is something hidden within us that tells us of our past, where would we look to find that record? Well, this is in the mid-1980s. We didn't know as much about DNA then as we know now. However, there is a very, very powerful precedent for taking ancient clues literally and following them to reveal information of our past that we hadn't known before. In the 19th century, a historian and amateur archaeologist, for example, Heinrich Schliemann, he asked a question in his day regarding the classic book, The Iliad, by Homer, and its descriptions of an ancient city of Troy. During Schliemann's time, it was believed that Troy was a mythical city that never really existed, and that the stories that were described by Homer in the Iliad were metaphors for battles between the forces of light and dark, good and evil. Heinrich Schliemann looked at these clues just a little differently. He said, what if these are descriptions of an ancient city that actually existed and battles that actually occurred? What would it tell us about ourselves and our past? What would happen if we followed those clues as though they were real? Well, this is precisely what he did. To make a long story very brief, he found himself at a mound of earth and began excavating in a place where no one had ever excavated before. No archaeologist had found this place in the past. What he discovered were 8 layers of civilization, 8 cities that had never been seen before. And as he uncovered each of these cities, he learned more and more of the mysteries of our past. Well, it was in the 9th level of the excavation in 1873 where he excavated the cities, streets, and the gates of the ancient city of Troy. And we knew for the first time that what Homer had written about in the Iliad was not fictional, that it was a literal description of our past. And all Heinrich Schliemann did was follow the clues. With that story in mind, we've got to ask ourselves, could the same thing have happened with us? Is it possible that the answer to some of our deepest mysteries, could those answers be so abundant that they're all around us and we simply haven't followed the clues that were left to us? What would happen if we did? Well, for the next few hours, I invite you to join me on a journey where together We will explore the ancient message in ourselves, how it works, what it says, what it means to us today. We'll answer the question of how we convert the DNA in life to languages of ancient alphabets. Well, to answer these questions together, you and I will cross the traditional boundaries of science and spirituality, the very boundaries that have kept us from seeing this message in the past. And in doing so, we'll open the door to a timeless secret and the enduring truth that empowers us to heal the very conditions that have led to our most painful beliefs and our deepest hurts. Because this is precisely the power of the message in yourselves. So if you're like me, you like to know where we're going when you hear a program like this. The program is essentially divided into three parts. I'm going to speak about the context of where we find ourselves in the world today first, because it's within the context of unprecedented circumstances that the message in ourselves has been discovered. Secondly, we're going to speak about how this code works, precisely how it can be derived and how we translate biology into language. Lastly, we're going to speak about what it means in our lives. What good does this code do us today? Certainly it's interesting, but how do we apply it in our lives and what does it mean? The context within which we find ourselves in the world today lays the foundation for perhaps why this code has been discovered now, maybe not 50 years ago or 25 years ago. We're living a time unlike any other time in recorded human history, and I know that you know that to be true. But have you ever really thought about how much our world has changed in only the last 100 years? In the last 100 years, we've attained powers unprecedented in human history. We can now customize our gene pool. We can access the DNA in our embryos and optimize the DNA for eye color, hair color, muscle conditioning, for athletic performance. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it good? Or is it bad? We're still dealing with the implications, the moral implications of what it means to have this technology, and we have the technology available to us today. In the last 100 years, we've attained the power to create new forms of matter. We create stuff in laboratories that's never been seen in this world before. And we can engineer brand new forms of life. And we can replicate that life and duplicate it time and time again. All of these are powers, historically, that have been left to what we call God in nature. Now we have them at our fingertips. We can do these things. Co-founder of the new principle, the new theory in physics, the superstring theory, Dr. Michio Kaku, comments on our time in history and how unique this time really is. What he says is that for most of human history, we could only watch what he calls the beautiful dance of nature. However, today, he says, we're on the cusp of this epic-making transition from being passive observers of nature to being active choreographers of nature. Before his death in 1996, astronomer Carl Sagan identified something very similar. He saw the uniqueness of our time, and he actually coined a term. I love the word that he coined to describe our time in history. Carl Sagan said that we're living a time that he called technological adolescence. Technological adolescence. He said it's a time where we gain access to the fundamental forces of creation on the one hand, and on the other hand, we're still gaining the maturity to know how to use those powers wisely. Well, I think you'll probably agree with me. In many respects, our technology has grown faster than the wisdom of how we apply it in our lives, all the way from medicine to nuclear energy to what we're speaking about here, to the DNA of our bodies and how we use that technology to address life conditions itself. Well, I find a great irony in our time in history. Because while all this amazing technology exists on the one hand, the technology that gives us access, direct access to the forces of nature, on the other hand, we're still witness to war, famine, and hate on unprecedented levels in our world today, conditions that you would think we could change with that kind of technology. In the last 100 years, we've become a species tremendously defined by our differences, differences that we've used to separate us rather than bring us together as a family, differences in our religions, differences in our skin color, differences in our wealth, differences in just the way